Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Given the exceptional assistance banks received to get them through a difficult time, we expect them to explore every responsible way to help get our economy moving again.
And in the president's meeting with the bank executives yesterday, he did get certain promises to lend more money. J.P. Morgan Chase and Bank of America each pledged $5 billion more next year to small and mid-sized companies. Wells Fargo promised a 25% increase to $16 billion, as Wells Fargo and Citibank became the last of the two big-to-fail banks to pay back their TARP money. So is this real money that will matter to the economy? And is there a paradox here, re-regulating the banks so they take less risk while cajoling them to take more risk? Greg David, Crain's New York business columnist, is back with us. He has also just left his position as Crain's editorial director for a faculty position at the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism. So, hi, Greg. Welcome back to WNYC. Will you sound more professorial now?
I don't think so, Brian. I'm trying very hard not to.
That's good. You can see if you can avoid that pitfall of academia. So I don't know enough to know the context of those lending numbers. Maybe you can help me out. Those promises from the banks to lend a few billion more to small and medium-sized businesses, are those meaningful promises or just a way of blowing smoke past the president?
Well, I mean, that's decent money. It's meaningful in terms of the banks themselves, but it's not, you know, it's not going to make a huge difference in the economy. You know, you raised the paradox right away, and that's central to it. But before we get to the paradox, let's give the president his due. He's absolutely right. Banks are not lending much, and they're especially not lending to small business. A figure from the Fed, total loan demand decreased by 2.8%. in the third quarter. That's the steepest drop since the Fed began collecting those statistics in 1984. We also know that unlike a year ago when credit was available to no one, credit is available to the largest corporations again. So small businesses are bearing the brunt of the credit contraction. For stories we're going to publish in Crain's on January 4th, we were talking to small businesses, and almost uniformly, they complain about how difficult it is to get to credit, even if their finances are in decent shape.
Are they just being perceived by the loan makers as worse risks in general than larger corporations?
Yes, and they are worse risks, as a matter of fact. Look, banks make their money from lending, right? So normally they would like to lend. But here's the paradox that you brought up. They are under requirements to make fewer risky loans, and despite the fact they've repaid the bailout money, they need to improve their capital. So to the extent they get money, they have to put it against their capital. Small businesses themselves, even if the owners tell you they're in decent shape means revenues are down from last year, because they're down from last year from virtually everyone, and their financial liquidity is less. So yes, by definition, most small businesses are riskier. And that's the paradox, you know?
Let me play the other side of the paradox from the president's lips, because we played the clip at the beginning where he's exhorting the banks to lend more money, that is, to take more risk. And here he's exhorting the banks to go along with the regulatory bills in Congress, which would limit the amount of risks that they could take. Listen.
I have no intention of letting their lobbyists thwart reforms necessary to protect the American people. If they wish to fight common sense consumer protections, that's a fight I'm more than willing to have.
So, Greg David, how do we square that circle?
Well, we don't square the circle, because you can't square what the president is doing. He's having it both ways. His administration is putting conflicting pressures upon the banks. So you can't square the circle.
But
just a contradiction in what the policy the administration is pursuing.
Or maybe you can square it if time is the kind of the X factor there. Just like experts say we should save more as a nation, personal savings, than we used to long term. But we should be spending more right now if we can, because things ground to such a halt in the economy. Maybe similarly, the banks need to take less less kind of stupid risks in the long term, but do need to be lending to small businesses more right now to jumpstart things. Does that make any sense?
Good try, Brian.
But
it doesn't work. They have to increase their capital reserves. That's the number one pressure from the administration. Look, yes, small businesses need more money. But, you know, there's another example about how complicated the issue is. SBA loans in New York, in the New York region in the last fiscal year, declined by 32%. These are guaranteed loans. So, obviously, the banks would make them if there was demand, and they could, right? So it's a much more complicated picture. Mm-hmm. I think the beating on the banks is primarily about politics. It's primarily about making sure when the election season starts next year that this administration is not blamed for the continuing recession. The Fed and others are going to continue to make the banks shore up their balance sheet because that's what they think is necessary to avoid another financial crisis, which, of course, none of us want.
But what about the shared responsibility that the president brought up? And obviously it's political, but do you think there's nothing to it, kind of from a, you know, social responsibility ethics standpoint? The president's basic message that after the taxpayers saved the big banks from going under last year, they have an obligation, now that they're doing okay again, to help save other companies and other jobs now?
At what cost? Look, there's an assumption here that banks don't want to make loans. Well, that's how they make their money. Of course they want to make loans. And it's, by the way, it's not because it's a social responsibility. It's because that's what they exist to do, make loans to make money. So it's not like they wouldn't want to make the loans. They don't want to make the loans because there's too much risk in it at the moment. You know, I remember early in the credit crisis, we did a story at Crain's about a fast-expanding dry cleaner. And he was really unhappy because he couldn't get a loan. Well, of course, he'd taken out 5 short-term loans, which he wanted to consolidate into 1 long-term loan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I read that, and I said, well, I wouldn't lend him any money either. He's obviously over-leveraged. So, you know, it's just we're not supposed to have social responsibility here. What we're supposed to do is we have banks to make loans on which they think they can make money because that's how the economy works.
Greg David from Crain's New York Business, my guest on WNYC. Let's keep our string of call-ins going here. We had call-ins earlier today from MTA riders, from unemployed people, from moms and dads who volunteer at your kids' schools. Now, how about for small business owners in our area? Do you feel that you are being unfairly locked out of loans that you deserve, that the banks are taking a look at your loan requests and judging you to be too big a risk, more of a risk than you actually are? Or anyone else from a small business? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And maybe a few of you who want to argue with Greg David about social responsibility, there may be a few of you out there. 212-433-9692. I want to ask a question about this alleged health of Citigroup and Wells Fargo and these other
alleged
banks.
Alleged, Brian? Well, that's a good word.
Here's why I ask. Here's why I'm at least confused about this. How can these banks be healthy enough to pay back their TARP money if they still have all these toxic assets on their books? The bad debts from the mortgage meltdown, those haven't been resolved by and large yet, have they?
No, and you're absolutely right. I think alleged is a good word for at least Citigroup and maybe Wells Fargo, which has too many home mortgages because of its too many risky home mortgages because of its acquisition of Wachovia. What happened is it became in everybody's interest to get them out from under TARP. The banks don't want to be subject to the onerous pay requirements that apply to companies that have TARP, and the Obama administration wants a victory to say we got the money back. And by the way, they're booking a pretty big profit when they get the money back. I saw $19 billion as a figure this morning. So, you know, it's in everybody's interest whether the fundamentals for those companies are really that much better or not.
And where do you see, and we'll ask our small business callers this as well, I wonder where from, you know, your reporting position at Crain's, see the small and medium-sized businesses of the New York region taking sides between the banks and the president, because obviously business, including small business, chafes at government poking its nose into their affairs. But I imagine they also see the banks right now as being too stingy with loans they feel they deserve. So who does local business see as the good guys and the bad guys here?
Well, I think they're conflicted, but that's to understand why we have to broaden the discussion from just loans.
Mm-hmm.
The Obama administration is taking several steps that small business owners are very opposed to and think are very dangerous to them, the most important of which is the health care plan passing, which is moving through the Congress. That will represent a huge burden for any small business which doesn't currently offer health insurance, and most of those who do offer health insurance. In addition, remember, if you're a successful small business, and I do want to underline the word successful here, the expiration of the Bush tax cuts and the other tax increases that the Obama administration is pushing on the, quote, wealthy, unquote, will hit you dramatically. So in the end, I don't know that small businesses will side with the banks, but I assure you that the vast majority of them are not about to side with the Obama administration.
Alexis in Red Bank, I think.
Hi.
You want to talk back to Greg David a little bit here?
Hi. I do. Greg, is it Greg or Craig?
Greg.
Greg. Okay, Greg, you always tend to favor big business when I hear you speak. I think the major, major contradiction that you're not bringing up here is that though the banks need to increase their capital reserves, they are not so concerned that they will not pay over $120 billion in bonuses this year, when the entire economy, I believe, has only grown by about $22 billion. So let's be real. The banks care about the banks. They don't care about the little guy.
Well, I think that, let me just suggest that there are two separate answers. My quick defensive answer on my part is I frequently take the side of small businesses, especially on things like the sick pay legislation working its way through the city council. So I would say I am frequently on the side of small businesses. But you hit another crucial point that we hadn't talked about yet. The reason the banks are in such trouble is because of the bonuses, because the bonuses are going to be very large this year, and that no one in the country except the people who work in finance thinks that's an appropriate thing to do.
Now, you have come on here in the past, as I know you well remember, to
yes.
defend the bonuses of big banks, but not of AIG. So how do you feel about the latest round?
Well, the answer is there are two things to be said, and the story's moved a little bit. One of which is there's a political quotient to the bonuses these days, which needs to exist. And that's the banks have to take cognizance of that the big bonuses are sparking this enormous backlash. Secondly, the huge profits being made on Wall Street this year, and the Independent Budget Office puts them at $59 billion, are a one-time affair. Profits on Wall Street in the IBO's analysis are going to fall back to $16 billion next year. So if huge bonuses are paid out this year, it's a result of extraordinary circumstances, primarily, by the way, the low interest rates we have. And therefore, you can make a good case that they shouldn't pay out huge bonuses on the basis of what they've done this year, because it's not what the people themselves have done. It's what the government has done to help them.
And what about the longer-term implications of the bonuses, the role that the bonuses may have played in crashing the economy in the first place? Because the bankers had huge incentives to make deals, including bad deals on securitized mortgages, because they got paid on the deals, not whether the deals go bad in the future. Let me play you a clip that amplifies that point from Michael Bishop from The Economist magazine on our show last week on this Wall Street practice that he calls IBG-YBG.
One of the problems that we've seen that the crisis highlighted was this culture called IBG, YBG, I'll be gone, you'll be gone. So there was a lot of people on the street who were saying, I can get a high commission by doing this deal, and by the time people figure out that this was a terrible deal, I'll have moved on to another company and got another job somewhere else. And I think part of this move to a more long-term compensation system is trying to destroy that culture, and I think that would be a very, very good thing
and he was
to get rid of that I'll be gone, you'll be gone culture.
And he was talking about the longer-term compensation or bonus system that Goldman Sachs apparently is going to try. Did you ever hear that term before, Greg, IBG, YBG?
No, I hadn't, but I'd heard the concept. Look, he's absolutely right. And everyone, even someone who defends the bonuses the way I do, suggests that no one wants full cash payouts in the year. We need to move to a system where much of the bonus is paid out in stock, that the stock can't be sold for a couple years, and that will tie everyone into a longer-term mentality. Now, don't overplay what Goldman did yet, and I think that's why the anger isn't gone yet. Goldman's going to pay bonuses to its top 300 executives in stock. That only leaves about 30,000 people who could get a lot of cash.
Tim in Tribeca, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tim.
Yeah, hi. I think what's missing from this equation is the retail banking of yore, the community banking, where a banker was someone who you went to on a regular basis as a business person who knew who you were and what your business was, and could evaluate your risk in a way that bankers of today have no way of determining, and that sort of banking is essential and totally almost totally gone.
Just to back up a little bit, you own a small business, I gather?
Yes, I do.
What kind of business, if you care to say?
I'm in metal fabrication. I do high-end custom metal work.
And so have you had experience with different kinds of banks, more community-oriented banks and bigger ones that's been different?
I haven't because I haven't, approached the bank for financing.
For loan, so. Uh-huh. Okay, but Greg, what about his point regarding community banks?
Well, he's right. Of course, community banks would be closer to their customers. But here's why community banks don't survive anymore. As soon as a business starts to grow, it wants to access other services. Maybe it's selling goods abroad and it needs letters of credit and other export services. Well, the community banks can't provide it. That's why people gravitate. You know, even consumers, I was talking these days when consumers want to pick a retail bank, the vast majority of them take a look at what the online infrastructure is, right? Can I do all my banking online? Can I pay my bills online? How good is the interface that I'm going to be looking at? Well, small banks can't compete on that. I don't know, Brian, do you want to go stand in the teller line these days?
Well, it's more convenient to go to the ATM if you can, but then again, it's another step of automation that puts another person out of work.
Well, yes, that's true. But when you do a mortgage these days, even a good, solid mortgage, it can go very quickly because you do it online with a specialist who probably isn't located anywhere near New York. Look, this is just the way it is, and small businesses that grow very quickly want sophisticated services. And when they want sophisticated services, they can't be with the small community banks. That's why small community banks aren't around anymore.
Stanley in Baldwin. You're on WNYC. Hi, Stanley.
Hi. I wish to clarify something about Obama putting pressure on the banks. My impression was that it's not that he wants them to take risks. He wants certain common sense precautions. For example, like when the investment bank, when a bank can take the savings and then invest it, they lose money. So that's one reason. That's another precaution. That's a precaution that he wants. And when the banks made all these loans to people who really couldn't pay, there's another precaution. So it's not that he wants banks to be more risky. He wants to put in certain common sense precautions that will prevent what just happened before.
Right. So precautions on the one hand, but more risk in the short term on the other hand. But we're just about out of time. But Greg, let me come back to the community bank question that the metal fabrication business owner asked, because I know that we've had guests, and we know anyway that there are community banks. There are regional banks that are not, Citigroup or Bank of America or whatever. And those banks have done better, I think, at least so far in this economic downturn than the big banks. And some of them advertise on that basis and still maybe have a little more money to lend to small businesses. Now, they may get socked in a second round. You're in a better position to judge this than I am if a lot of commercial real estate goes down. But there is this other group of banks that calls themselves community lenders that say they're actually, they never needed TARP money.
Right, but they're not, to our knowledge, they're not actually lending anymore. And one of the reasons is that they would probably have even higher standards than the big banks, because they are more conservative and they're more cautious.
Right,
so
and
there's
I guess
no reason to think they would be more aggressive lenders.
I see. All right. Well, and on and on and on we go.
That's right.
And we'll see what the Senate does with the restrictions on. Actually, I'll throw this one into you, too. This House passed banking reform bill aimed at big banks. It'll be harder in the Senate, like so many things are. This House bill would require big banks to have more of a cash cushion to avoid the kind of meltdown that happened last year, and it would give the government more power to break up banks that are too big to fail if the government sees them as becoming too risky. And those changes sound like good conservative common sense on their face. Do you support those changes?
Well, I certainly support the second change, absolutely. I think too big to fail is the great reason the financial crisis was so great. We have to let banks that screw up go out of business. And, yes, we need to get to too big to fail. But, look, this is not a liberal conservative position. The Wall mm-hmm. Street Journal editorial page, as conservative as they come, has been arguing this for a couple of years now.
Because they don't want the government bailouts with the government hooks in the institutions that results in, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah.
So there's a general consensus here that we've got to get to the point where no one is too big to fail.
All right. Greg David from Crane's New York Business. Greg, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, should we call this the bunker decade that's ending? Our next guest thinks we should. Stay with us.